Hi folks, welcome to another weekend podcast. I'm Carl, I'm joined by Hugo, and we're going to be talking about the Great Reset and the Fourth Industrial Revolution yet again. Again, topics that we feel need more coverage than they adequately get, because it seems that these are going to be colossal projects that we are all going to be exposed to. But before we start, if you'd like to go to lotusseats.com, if you're interested in supporting alternative media, you can check out our site and you can support us there by becoming a premium member, and there's loads of extra premium content that is exclusive to the site. But anyway, let's get into it. Hugo, what are we talking about here?
So last week we talked about the maybe incoming Biden administration, mm-hmm. And what his picks are and what their connection to the Great Reset might be.
Yep.
And there's actually a quite large connection that we omitted last week. That is John Kerry talking to the World Economic Forum directly at that conference about what Biden's administration is going to do and how it's going to approach international relations in that kind of sphere. And so I wanted to talk about that this week because it's important and kind of sets the direction, even though the histories and the aims of the individuals within the new administration are maybe not as clear, the direction as a whole coming from Kerry is laid out pretty well. So we'll take a look at that. And so this was an interview or a contribution was hosted by the World Economic Forum that was on the 17th of November this year. And the host was the World Economic Forum, and the guests were Ursula von der Leyen, that's the European, the president of the European Commission, that's the executive branch of the European Union, roughly speaking. And
I think that's exactly right. They're the ones who create a draft legislation and propose.
It is that, so, it differs a bit from, for example, the American executive branch. So that's what I'm saying, roughly speaking. But anyway, she was one of the guests. John Kerry was another one. Then there were a couple of lower profile people there. And so I wanted to focus on these two. Because from what she's saying, you can see how the European Union views the Great Reset and how it interacts with it, and then Kerry as well, who speaks after Ursula is the first, John Kerry is the second. And so the event is called The Great Reset: Building Future Resilience to Global Risks. And it starts with the advert Great Reset that you can find on YouTube. That is kind of the great introduction into the concept and into the tone that they want to set.
It's also kind of the inspirational message they're trying to put across, isn't it? It's the pathos in their persuasive technique rather than the logos or ethos.
It starts with these dystopian images, with these calamities and forest fires and everything that's might be happening around the world, and then it says it's time for the Great Reset, and then it changes to this beautiful world where everything
it's
is healed and
very nice.
It is. Yeah. And it features protests, like BLM protests and things like that, so you can see which groups and which people it is appealing to. At the same time, we're going to come to one point that may be a bit spicy in this regard, so it's going to be interesting. But so it starts with the advert, and then it goes on to the interviews. Mm-hmm. And so we'll start with Ursula von der Leyen. And so she starts with talking about COVID because it's the most important thing. And what's interesting about how she frames it is that she first talks about COVID for like 5 minutes, something like that. And then she immediately changes to saying, we know that there is a link between rising temperatures and infectious disease and spread of infectious diseases, and we see that across the world, like in let's say hotter or southern areas of the world, it's some diseases are more prevalent and more easy to spread. And so she kind of mentions that, and it's kind of disconnected from COVID, but I think what she means to do is to make the connection between climate change and COVID, which is really weird. It's not what she does per se, but it's how it comes across, and it's kind of like
Well, I can see the way she's trying to overlay it. I mean, like, yeah. Everyone knows that, you know, tropical climates produce very virulent mm-hmm. diseases, you know, like European settlers finding malaria and things like this. So it seems she's trying to take that fear and overlay it yeah. over COVID. But the origin story of COVID is not the same as... It's not because of a hot place and, you know, global warming. It's because of a Chinese wet market, it seems.
Wet market.
Let's go with the official story.
Yeah.
It's a Chinese wet market that diseases were running rampant in. Mm-hmm. So global warming had nothing to do with it. So it's interesting how she's trying to conflate the two. But
yeah, and how she positions those two things. I think she does that deliberately to kind of create the connection in your head between COVID and climate change, because climate change is a major issue on which they focus in the Great Reset and in all these initiatives and projects. And so this is an interesting start to how she goes on about it. And also she looks very much like a villain. She looks very dystopian. So
she honestly, before we play it, right, I was immediately put in mind of Dr. Bream from Half-Life 2. Broadcasting from the mega screens over the dystopia, and all, like, you know, it genuinely reminds me of something out of 1984. I can picture, you know, dark slum city with a giant screen with her on it, speaking in the way that she speaks, in this kind of calm, disarming, almost sort of sophomoric way, you know, to try and put you to sleep and lower your resistance. But anyway, let's.
Before we play the video, I just wanted to mention that then she goes on about the European Green Deal. They dropped the adjective new because it was too much. European New Green Deal and Green New Deal is too much a mouthful. So they shortened it to European Green Deal, and it's in line with what was proposed in the US. So that is a part of how they plan to address some of the problems that they see in the world today.
It's also a terrible name. They should have gone for revolution. Like Europe's tradition for the last 300 years has been revolution. You should have used that.
Well,
they're trying to do Green New Deal in America because of the New Deal that Roosevelt, or whoever it was, brought in. Over here, it's the Industrial Revolution. In Europe, it's revolution itself, isn't it?
You would think it would be the other way around, that the Americans would like to call it revolution because of their history and
maybe
their veneration of the American Revolution. But we'll talk about later how the fourth industrial revolution is one thing that is being pushed as well, and so that's actually called that. But I think it's smart of them not to use the revolution term, because it has bad connotations for large chunks of Europe. So.
But it is actually what they're arguing for, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's marketing, so you need to, you know.
They've got PR to be concerned about it. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Right. And so what's interesting about the way that she talks about this COVID crisis and in relation to previous crises, and in particular the 2008 financial crisis, because she says that in the beginning, she says that she's happy to see the COVID stimuli. That it's very good that economies are being propped up by central banks using free cash, and she's very happy to see this kind of cooperation and support. And then she goes on to say that. That the European Union cannot make the same mistake as it did in 2008 and approach that crisis in the same way, that they have to do new things and different things, because if they do the same things, it will end up badly and in an unsatisfactory manner, as it did, according to her, according to a lot of people, in the last time around. And so, so at that point, she says that stimulus was actually bad in 2008. And she says that that was one of the mistakes. She says we cannot repeat the mistakes, such as XYZ stimulus, right?
Yeah.
And so it's very weird. But also then she comes back to the COVID crisis and she says that she's happy to see the stimulus again. So it's very, if you actually look at it not from a like a fan point of view, her fan point of view, it's very like weird what she's actually
from
doing
an oppositional point of view. This is a strange method of persuasion.
Yeah. Like if you actually agree with her and see this as like a nice speech to motivate people to do nice things, then okay, you're just gonna
ignore it. Yeah.
But otherwise it's really weird that she does this.
Okay.
Right, and so let's get to the clip, because she also addresses how the Biden administration, how it interfaces with Europe and what it's going to do and how it's going to look. So let's take a look.
Yes, so first of all, one of the big changes is we will have again a friend in the White House, and the tone will be different. So this is completely... I was about to say new, but it is something which we knew we had missed for a while, and now we are happy to have that back.
Creepy.
When I was watching it for the first time, I watched it on 1.5 speed, and so this was even worse.
So
a friend in the White House. So that says quite a lot. It says that, and the way that she looks when she says it, she looks kind of
very
happy,
relieved. Yeah. She looks like Trump was a big spanner in the works, doesn't she?
She does look like it, yeah. And a friend in the White House saying basically we're back on track, yeah. We're back on something that we can work with that is going to do something that we want as well, that we could
there's a shared
goal and direction.
Shared convergence mm-hmm. of interests and goals here, and you can see just the relief. And I watched some of this as well, and it mm-hmm. was all across the board. In fact, they seem very relieved that Biden got his mega victory. So if he wasn't so popular, it'd be a real problem. But it's just a ball of raw charisma.
And so then she says at the end that since they've got a friend in the White House now.
Yeah.
No.
the use of the term friend, isn't it? Very much like Di Dong Cheng. You know, oh, we have friends in the American government and the establishment is back. And then again, but I think that this is the way that basically power politics works at these levels.
Yeah.
And I think the term friend essentially means trusted ally.
Yeah. Ally would be.
But trusted ally because of converging interests mm-hmm. again. Mm-hmm. So the people they know that will be on side because of some shared interest that they have.
Yep.
And I think that all of these politics work this way. So
I think you're right in that. Like it's interesting that she actually uses the same term as the Chinese guy.
It is.
So then she says that a part of what the US will probably do and what she hopes it will do is to reestablish and refund a lot of international institutions. She mentions WHO, the WTO. And so that's what she thinks is going to happen and is a good thing. Then rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement. That's her main point. And so then they switch to Kerry, and this is kind of a transition to what he says, because they then ask him about what he's actually planning to do, or what the administration plans to do.
This is former Secretary of State John Kerry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, so a member of the Skull and Bones Club, you know, all these sort of, again, the sort of person who has a lot of friends, I think, is the
He worked as the Secretary of State. I don't know the exact name of the position, but it's the equivalent of a Secretary of State, but for the Vice President. And so he worked under Obama.
But I think these are part of essentially the same group of people in the American government that have had a lot of influence over the American government.
And so that's why he's to become what was it? He's not to become Secretary of State, but
he's some kind of emissary of this culture. I don't know exactly.
We went through him and the other people in last week's podcast. You can check it out.
I can't remember exactly what his position was, but it's important. Otherwise, he wouldn't be featured.
And so let's take a look at the first clip.
The answer to your question is no, you're not expecting too much, and yes, it will happen. And I think it will happen with greater speed and with greater intensity than a lot of people might imagine. In effect, the citizens of the United States have just done a great reset. We've done a great reset.
Right. So just to be clear on something, it was the World Economic Forum that was having problems with their video casting there. But that was John Kerry speaking from his lovely oak paneled room in his mansion.
Yeah, which you will see in the other clip.
The other clip, yeah. And but what are you saying there? I mean, I find that deeply concerning. Are you expecting too much? No, it's going to happen with great alacrity or whatever it was, and it's going to be very intense. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, what he was referring to was this answer was to a question of if Ursula and the World Economic Forum expects you to enter back through the Paris Accord and to fund these international institutions to become a friend and ally, are we expecting too much? And he says, no, you're not expecting too much. This is going to happen. This is going to be instant. This is going to be with greater speed and greater intensity than a lot of people might imagine. So
it sounds like they've really geared up to move quickly.
They think it's urgent.
Biden takes office.
They think it's urgent. Yeah. So it's a... It's clear that this is a priority, and this is something that they want to do as fast as possible to kind of get back on this kind of track, because otherwise you're going to pass up this chance with COVID.
Yeah, and for anyone who hasn't seen the previous COVID podcast, the Great Reset podcast we've done, Klaus Schwab just openly says that COVID-19 is a great opportunity for a great reset, and lots of other world leaders and very important figures have said exactly those words, so... Just take them at the word, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting about what he says next, that the American public have already done a great reset by voting for Biden.
Yes.
I think that's an interesting perspective. Because
that is an interesting perspective.
Because you could actually see, and I would quite agree with that, to be honest, that the great reset is not some like an unprecedented change, mm-hmm. but it's what reset means, is the return back to factory settings, right? Mm-hmm. And so... You've got you had 4 years of something that was not in line of the end of history, and then so what they actually mean by the Great Reset is going back to the way it was.
Yeah, the question is how far back is the way it was, and from the way that they're talking, it sounds like it's so far back it actually returns us to feudalism.
Sure. But what I mean is to go back to the Obama administration so that they can continue on the trajectory that it had back then, right? And so I think that's a really interesting perspective to look at it, because we typically think of it as this great unprecedented change, but it can be a return to the factory settings, which is Obama trajectory.
Yeah, as you wrote in your article about it, I mean, it's actually not a great reset. Yeah. It's a return to what they were already doing. Trump was the reset from our perspective.
So what Carl was referring to was the article that I wrote about 3 weeks ago by now. Yeah. It's called An Actual Great Reset, and you can find it on lotusseaches.com. Yeah. And it's free.
It is. And it's been trending on there as well.
Okay. That was a plug. Right. So Kerry is disappointed later after this clip. He says American people have done the Great Reset by voting for Biden, but he's also disappointed that many people voted for Trump. And he doesn't say his name. He says he's disappointed that so many people voted for chaos and disorder. Yeah.
I mean, he literally calls Trump an agent of chaos.
Yeah.
And the thing is, right, I mean, I guess I have to give him it. He's not wrong. From Kerry's mm-hmm. perspective, from the mm-hmm. perspective of the managerial bureaucrat who sees everything on spreadsheets and tables and expects everything to line up and be in order, the sort of, you know, the kind of globalist view, then Trump is absolute chaos. But from the position of like a sort of a Hayekian sort of liberal, what Trump is really a representation of like a real liberal order where things can happen that mm-hmm. are the will of the people effectively, and you know, you get pushed up via democracy. Things like Trump should be able to happen in a free society, as Hayek would describe it, and as Kerry clearly views it, that's dangerous, because I mean, why would the people at the top want chaos and disorder? It's only the people at the bottom that benefit from that.
I think another thing that he means by it is what they also call fragmentation. Mm-hmm. And they say that in these hard and unprecedented times, we live in a fragmented world. What they mean is a world of states that sometimes cooperate, but often don't cooperate with one another, and that don't have an overarching structure.
It's not a streamlined, controlled system.
Exactly. The states have some kind of structure above them, but it's a structure that where power flows in different ways. It doesn't flow from the top down. It is complicated, right? Yeah. It's a complicated system, and so that is kind of a chaos. Yeah. And that's I think what he's invoking.
Yeah, well. Absolutely. There's a lack of predictability.
Yes.
Because of the lack of information that he has.
Because you have a lot of different agents that can decide in different ways. Exactly. You don't have a central agent that can mandate something that would then be predictable and that would happen.
And this is exactly what Hayek is arguing for in The Road to Serfdom. Because, again, back in the 70s, I think, when he wrote this, he was...
No, 40s.
It was 40s, yeah.
He wrote the better stuff in the 70s.
Yeah, no, he didn't. But he was exactly right. He was exactly right about the sort of pluralistic society, that it is chaos, but it's kind of, you know, it has rules that it abides by, but that's not good for people who want to streamline and manage society. But he was speaking against a sort of administrative society all the way back then. And now we can see just how much worse it gets. But anyway.
Yeah. He was the great popularizer of that in the UK.
And he's right.
He was right. Partly.
He was right. Let's move on.
He was more right in the 70s. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah.
So now we come to the other clip that they are picked out because it's interesting in how they position themselves and against whom. Mm-hmm. So let's watch.
I personally believe, Borga, that we're at the dawn of an extremely exciting time. And if you can get away from the craziness of the politics of chaos that have consumed so many, and the politics of identity politics.
So the politics of chaos, which essentially means freedom.
That means Trump.
And yeah, and it, of course. And when he says identity politics, I assume he means radical leftism as well.
I think so. And that's why I picked this clip. Also, does he look excited when he says exciting times?
That's the thing. Anything that gets John Kerry excited, I actually don't want to be a part of.
He doesn't look excited. He looks...
Sure, but he's like 78 or something, so I don't expect him to be too excited. But anything that gets his blood pumping, I'm not interested in. But this is the thing, isn't it?
It's a good compass.
Yeah, literally, it's how I've judged everything in my life, and look what I have so far. Admittedly, I don't have a giant wood-paneled room, but there we go. But
we've got a bookshelf as well. But the point is impressive.
He's literally framing himself and these people as the source of order, as if that is the only value that we have in life and in society.
And so he says against chaos on the one side, and that he's definitely talking about Trump because that's what he calls him before when he talks about the election. And so he's positioning himself and the Great Reset and the World Economic Forum and the European Union. He's positioning those people against Trump, which is not surprising. That's what you would expect. But then he positions itself that all of that against identity politics as well, which is the interesting part, because identity politics supporting people would probably be on board with at least some parts of the Great Reset and all of this kind of agenda.
Yeah, right? I mean, when the Great Reset agenda addresses the issues of, say, borders and things like this.
I think it would be more about climate change. Like, that would be the priority.
I think that would also be a priority. But when it comes to immigration and borders, the Great Reset folks are surely going to be like, well, borders are bad. We should have mass immigration.
They haven't actually been too vocal about those types of things.
No, I just naturally assumed.
I don't think so, because a lot of countries, a lot of governments are involved in that whole initiative. And so saying that would be too aggressive against those governments.
I've seen them talking about refugees and how, I mean, was in the...
They talk about that, for sure.
And that's effectively the subject that we're talking about, isn't it?
I think not exactly,
but I think it's fair to fold one into the other, because I think that it's the impetus that makes them say, oh, refugees have to be assimilated everywhere, is also the sort of, I don't know, soft push against borders. That's what I would call it.
I would say those are quite different things, because especially in the kind of in the way that they present themselves and that they present this initiative to states and why they say that the states should support it and join it, right? Yeah. Because they would say, okay, we've got these humanitarian problems, we've got like refugees and wars and things like that. And so because of that, you need to change or maintain your, how would I say it? Your welcoming policies towards refugees, but they don't say the words open borders or anything like that.
I think
it's a different thing as well, because when you're talking about refugees, what they mean and what I think they would insist on as well is people who are actually applying for asylum. So that might be for good reasons or for bad reasons, right? There's different things, and it's obviously not going to stay the way that they outline it at first.
Sure, but the issue I have is it doesn't end there, right? And they are constantly expanding the definition of who is a refugee or migrant, you know, economic refugees now, which is a nonsense term that doesn't have any grounding in reason. And then you've got the idea, you know, all of the Merkel saying things like, well, everyone has to take their fair share of refugees. It's like, well, no, they don't, actually. You took the refugees. And in fact, no one needed to take any refugees beyond Greece, because that was the first safe country. And we could have just given Greece money, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, with the Democrats disrespecting the system in the United States by threatening to pack the courts and things like this, it's these constant attempts to widen and edge open these sort of boundaries that I consider to be suspect in and of themselves, and essentially I think is part of a general motion against nation states and borders. And since it's coming from the globalists, who obviously hate nation states and borders, I don't think it's unreasonable to ascribe that intent to them. But I agree with you that technically it is they are separate things. That's right.
Why I'm saying is because a lot of those people who are involved in the Great Reset come from governments and are. Mm-hmm. Are parts of nation states.
Yeah.
And
but Trudeau doesn't exactly love Canada, does he?
Of course, but Trudeau is a vocal person and a famous person, but most of those people aren't, right?
Sure, but that doesn't mean they don't share his perspective, even if they come from nation states.
I think they mostly wouldn't on open borders, because that's a very direct attack. And so I think if something like that were to be pushed by the Great Reset, which I think is not unreasonable to expect, it would be pushed under the table and not openly.
Yeah, almost through the guise of a refugee crisis.
Maybe, but that's... I think those are a bit different things.
Okay.
And also they are marketed as different things to everyone involved. And I don't think there's... I think there's kind of this consensus on even among the people who are involved in the Great Reset on borders being an okay thing, but solidarity with people who want to move somewhere because of their bad circumstances being another. So that's
a more charitable interpretation than I'd give. But that's okay. Let's carry on.
Okay, so then he says later on, that's after this clip, that bringing in the private sector against global warming is the fastest thing that you can do and that anyone can do, because you've got the largest amount of money there. And money which can be more easily moved and which is less bureaucratized and so better movable and better mobilizable than state money, right? And so what he says is that we, as in the Great Reset people, need to be in every boardroom to push for investment into green technology and things like that. So that would be kind of acceptable, I guess, but what it means in reality is that they will get on board the big players in each industry, and then agree with them on how things should be, and then they will be able to push stringent requirements on the rest who won't be able to compete. They will essentially create kind of a proto-fascistic system whereby you will have these big players and only these big players, because the other ones have been pushed out of what is acceptable and what is not, and those big players had agreed to that beforehand, right? And so that's the whole kind of playbook that is being started with.
It does sound very fascistic, actually.
Yep.
And what else does it remind me of? There's the priestly class of the radical left, in fact. You know, you need a Great Reset person on your board, and you need a diversity officer on your board, and they all have the same ideas, and they're all in agreement, all part of the same network. And so it's the same sort of tactics.
It's very similar. Right. So I wanted to talk about an interesting topic for discussion, that is the difference between how the left aims to reverse what the right does when it does it, and the right t- takes for granted what the left does when it does it. Mm-hmm. But that's a discussion for another time because we don't have that much time. So we'll leave it for another video.
Next weekend, yeah.
Exactly. So let's move on.